Hi, my name is George, aka Spike Green. You may remember me for shouting out Real Sharks podcast over at the Film Geek Collective. Basically, anyone who supports us at all gets to be part of the collective. No money required. If you want to learn more about film, if you want to learn just a whole bunch of tricks and tips and stuff, and just various things about film, I am like a go-to guide. I hope to be a go-to guide. Now, if you want to check out the Film Geek Collective, the link is anchor.fm/george-d2. Alright? Well, I guess I'll see you guys there, and thank you, Real Sharks Podcast. Keep listening to them too. Thank you so, so, so much. You're always welcome at the Film Geek Collective, and don't you forget it.
It is time. Sharks in order. Our shark.
There's a Sharknado coming!
Are those sharks with laser beams attached to their heads?
Welcome to the
Sharks.
The episode.
Yeah, no, I decided to just start the intro by saying, hey YouTube, and everybody listening at home on the podcast and watching at home on YouTube, it's your host Rob, a brony, with his two noble co-hosts, Steve, and the man that he can say has added beating COVID to his, list of accolades, and that's going to be his Lucas Maximus.
Hey everybody. It's gonna really suck if like something like happens out of nowhere and I die tomorrow.
Just like, well, not.
Yeah. It will be funny though, I'll admit. I don't want it to happen. I will, like, as I'm in the emergency room, like, it's funny as fuck.
Like, this is the way.
Like, I'll grab the nurse and be like, let them know my last words were, this is a pretty good bit. So,
we're real sharks. So before we get started, I want to throw some shout out to Spike Green, to Fear, to Hard Time Up Cinema, to Should I Watch This? You should watch that, but should also watch this. Vern over at Cinema Recall, and Movies to Watch Together, and Sherlock Lester Video. Hey, thanks guys for being awesome on Twitter, and that's to all of our allies and friends on Twitter. Hey guys, thanks for being awesome. So there we go. So let's go ahead and kick this episode of Real Sharks off with the ever-popular movie news. So I know Steve had a bunch, I got some too, but I'll just start with some of the obvious here. So, before I get started, I want to thank President Trump before we move on. I know this is going to be controversial, but I want to thank him for making political thrillers basically no longer thrilling. You cannot write real life as much as what's going on now. I'm pretty sure House of Cards will never be exciting again. I'm pretty sure no political drama will ever be exciting again. I mean, hell, you can't even write spy thrillers this good. So I just want to thank him for that, for ruining movies. And I don't mean that in a good way. I mean that in a sarcastic, asshole-ish way. So, anything to add? Anybody have anything to add to that?
I just want to point out a tweet by a comedian, Tom Sharpling, who described the situation as, we now know what a remake of Mars Attacks would look like if all the aliens played by Larry the Cable Guy. Like, that's the only way to really describe what happened.
I have to agree with that.
It's like if Tom Clancy huffed gas and then tried to make up a story on the spot. That's
what I'm saying. No Tom Clancy film, no Tom Clancy book or film will ever be the same again because of all this.
Can't even get close to that.
All right, so let's get started with some of the funnier stuff. Well, not really funny. So I don't know if you guys heard, there's a new rumor about the new Flash movie that's coming out. DC and Warner Brothers Films announced that big names like
Ben Affleck and Michael Keaton are going to be on set to do the movie to reprise their roles as the Bruce Waynes. Interesting or not interesting, guys?
Well, we kind of knew about this. This has been some rumors, right? Ahead of time. So, I don't know. what more can you say about Batman going forward?
It's stop a little, doing him and killing him.
Yeah, just let it be, kind of. You know, don't bring him back. Because what's the purpose of bringing them back other than nostalgia purposes? But for a scene, you're going to be like, oh, that's cool. You bring back the Batman. Now I'm just reminded of the better Batmans to when I'm watching currently.
To keep DC relevant.
Yeah. you know, Batman, the only guy keeping DC alive.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, Luke, what did you think about that, hearing Michael Keaton and Ben Affleck? Did that get you excited for the new Flash movie?
Yeah, not really. I mean, Michael Keaton will probably be good, but, like, it doesn't matter. The Ben Affleck one is interesting because I thought he was kind of like done with DC because, you know, he was pretty adamant about that he was done with. So yeah, I mean, I'm assuming he's doing it for the money either way. I guess what the more interesting thing is, because we're talking about the possibility of Michael Keaton and Ben Affleck, obviously there's going to be some element of time travel. Flash does time travel all the time. I'm more curious if this means that we're going to be looking at, like, different versions of Batman.
I was just thinking that.
Yeah, so, like, is this going to be... It's possible we're looking at, you know, something regarding Flashpoint, because Flashpoint is, you know, one of the Flash's biggest modern arcs right now. That also opens it... And that, of course, opens it up to, like, basically do whatever you want, because you can do different realities, different dimensions, and do different versions of superheroes as you go. That'll be interesting, I think, because Marvel also, with Stephen Strange, you know, we were doing something called the Marvelverse. We also know that the new Spider-Man, you know, with Tom Holland, that might also get into stuff with alternate dimensions. So I'm curious if, like, we're in a sort of creative arms race with DC and Marvel now trying to, like, go into the next step of their shared universes, which is then, you know, opening the door to have, like, multiple different universes, so we can have different types of Batman, we can have different types of the same superhero, because once that happens, then it's, you don't even need to make new superheroes, you just need to have one superhero and make him again and again and again and again. We'll see, so I'm curious who will get there first, if the Marvel or DC does it, and I'm curious who does it better.
It's going to be director Andy Muschietti. Muschietti, sorry if I said that wrong. He's known for doing the It movies, the 2017 It and Mama from 2013. You know, I wasn't a big fan of It. We kind of berated it here on the show a little bit. I don't know. So this is going to be a superhero take from him. So it's going to be interesting, I think.
If it's a horror guy, that probably means that he's there as a, like, to just kind of get things moving along. Because if, you know, so I don't know. Because if
hopefully darken up Batman.
Yeah. Or he's just there because, well, did he direct the second It movie, or was he just someone?
Yeah.
No. Okay. Yes. Well, that kind of that changes it a little bit.
Right, that's what I thought. So here's something that's pretty well known right now going forward in the world. I mean, I wanted to mention it because we do movie news. It's a subject that we have. Disneyland is actually going to become a COVID vaccination site. Great PR.
Yeah.
And I'm not being mean, fantastic. But isn't that amazing? That's great for them. Yeah. I mean, that's very good of Disney to do. I mean, in a way that's kind of saying, like, hey, don't forget about the happiest place on earth, you know, before we go away. Make sure to get your tickets.
Yeah, definitely. Especially now when they're kind of floundering as far as cash-wise goes. And, you know, they're flying off the success of The Mandalorian. So they're trying to get people to, you know, hey, don't forget about me type of thing. So, you know, hopefully people still are Disney fanatics. I feel like the park is always what it is, especially with that and California Adventure. We'll see. People are definitely going to want to go.
They said Disneyland, not California Adventure, Steve. That's going to cost you.
You know they're going to pull something. Disney's going to be like...
I mean, hey, my assumption is that they'll probably do it in the parking lot, so it's basically the park.
Yeah.
It's what
do they do it in the park?
Hmm?
Where would they do it in the park?
There's no space in the park. It's all, you know.
In the rides. You could do, like, you know, in the rides. Like it's a small world. Just go around in a circle.
I think they should do, because it's a two-parter. You need to do the first set, and then you do the second, I believe. I believe on the second one, that should be, like, your ticket into Disneyland. Like, if you can arrange to get your second vaccination, and then, boom, you get to go to Disneyland. That'll get you.
It's like, you just got your vaccination. Where are you going, little Timmy? I'm going to Disneyland.
It's like, little Timmy, you're already here. What's the odds of these kids, like, getting vaccinated while they're on Small World? They're like, oh, look at this. I'm on Small World. Ah, what was that prick? Nothing.
Nothing's for COVID.
I'm actually really excited about that prospect of families going in to get their vaccination. They're taking the kids. They see Disneyland. They don't go into Disneyland and just get a shot. That is such a great move. That's such a good... I respect every parent that does that. I respect every parent that doesn't say shit either about it. Like, when the kids start losing their minds, like, we're going to Disneyland, holy... You know, get them hyped. Don't say a thing. Everybody goes, gets vaccinated. Go home. Absolute power move. And I hope more. And I hope as many parents as possible do that.
Such yeah. And then you can't. You're not lying. I thought we were going to Disneyland. Well, we did.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and move into some of our reviews. I wanted we're a little late on the game on this one, but you know, it doesn't matter because it doesn't matter unless Rail Sharks talks about it. Let's just be honest, everybody. It doesn't. Let's just be honest. It doesn't matter until we talk about it. So I wanted to actually touch base on The Mandalorian. Let's talk about The Mandalorian. Let's talk about all of Season 2. So I'm just going to give my overall opinion of Season 2. You know, it had Pedro Pascal in it, of course, as The Mandalorian. I have to say I thought Season 2 was stronger than the first season. Mm. I mean, I really thought when I was watching it that it would... It would be slower. I thought it would have a slower take. There would be more of a, let's draw this out to, you know, make it so we don't have to end the series right away. But no, it was clear cut as day, action packed from every episode. I mean, they were all good. I can't really think about too many episodes I really didn't care about in the season two. I thought it was good. I loved, again, the nuance and the lore of everything, of adding to the universe of Star Wars. The cameos were incredible. They had some great cameos. And, you know, I want to go ahead and talk about, you know, like the first episode, for example, was, you know, was really good with the whole Western. Steve, help me out. Who was the cameo for the first one with Tatooine, the sheriff?
His name. Oh, hold on one second.
Timothy Oliphant?
There we go. Timothy Oliphant. Mandalorian is essentially a spaghetti Western. And I really did like from the first episode, I thought it was good because, one, I love how Mando can talk to the Tusken Raiders. That was something that was new that had not been done before. You know, they talk in a type of sign language, but they basically represent the Indians. This whole episode was basically a sheriff that didn't want the Indians to raid the town. So basically the sheriff and the Indians hate each other, and this guy brings them together to fight a common enemy, which is that gigantic worm.
It is interesting that they gave an interesting they gave it nuance to the Tusken Raiders.
Yes.
Like, you know, and made them a little bit more than just like, you know, yeah, exactly.
Barbarians, yeah.
Very interesting about it. And I think, like, I would love to learn more about now the Tusken Raiders because it seems like they've got, it looks like they're not just, you know, just like evil henchmen guys. So,
right. Yeah, that you can actually speak to, that they're more civilized than people would, you know, sort of portray them as they've seen in other films where they're either just being slaughtered or they're just attacking people on sight. So it's very interesting that this show kind of brings forth where they only attack people because you're on their territory and you didn't ask permission. So it was cool that they have a sort of language as well to the race.
And a sort of honor system, too. You know, like, kind of like the Indians, like, when the Marshal's talking to him, which is the name of that episode, he's just like, you know, gives him that little thing to drink, and he's like, oh, you take their water, but you won't drink his water, or blah, blah, blah. And it was just like, so Native American, you know, you take our land and our water. But I thought it was really good. I did. I thought it was good. I liked how they explained how people, you know, sometimes use Mandalorian armor to intimidate, to use it for their own needs, even though they're not Mandalorian, which I thought was great.
Which was the theme of this series, or this season, I should say, is people wearing Mandalorian armor that were portrayed not as being Mandalorians, right, at first with the Marshal now and then other characters later on in the other episodes, but there's more credence to Mandalorians. Like, there's not just one way as Mando sees it, where it's there's just one way of the Mandalorian, you never take your helmet off. And then he kind of was wanting it back from the Marshal guy from this episode. And then obviously we get into some more episodes where the Mandalorian kind of is like reevaluating his own creed,
right,
because of what he sees. There's some giant episodes that I don't really want to skip over them, but he meets a major character that was from the animated series, I believe, Clone Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Ahsoka. Ahsoka Tashan, which was portrayed by Rosario Dawson. And I didn't really see the animated series all the way. I saw a couple episodes, and I felt like she portrayed that character well.
I thought
in
she
that
did
episode.
Too.
Yeah, and just like Rob was saying, we went from Western to now more of the Japanese samurai, because there was this woman who was, I don't know if she was Empire or not, she kind of was like guarding this facility and hunting Ahsoka with her companion, who was played by Michael Biehn, the Terminator and Aliens fame, which was sick to see. She has this Beskarian spear made out of Beskar, which can deflect like lightsabers.
Lightsabers, yeah.
She has this showdown with Ahsoka, which was pretty interesting to see. It was very Japanese in retrospect, which really hasn't been seen in Star Wars as far as lightsaber duels goes.
No.
It's usually just choreographed or just like the older style. You never really saw the like one-on-one showdown and in that type of style. It was very interesting to see. And not only that, but just to see that you now know what the baby's name is, which is Grogu. Spoilers, you haven't seen it. So that's it's an interesting name.
What do you think of that name? I was just gonna say, what do you guys think of that name?
I kind of like it. It's grown on me.
It's okay. That's
all right.
Baby Yoda. I'll call him Baby Yoda.
I still call him Baby Yoda, yeah, right?
Yeah, I think everyone probably still.
Yeah.
Right.
Luke, what did you think of season two as a whole?
Funny you mentioned that, because I did not only did I watch it, I actually watched the first season too before I watched the second. Rewatched it. Because it's surprisingly, although the episodes are like 40 minutes, you can get the whole thing in a day. Some interesting things I noted was that, first off, there was kind of like, I liked it wasn't huge, but it was kind of the moral grayness of it, because, you know, Mando is a mercenary, he's a bounty hunter. He has a code, obviously, but he's not, you know, he's not doing things out of the goodness of his heart, generally. Obviously, he goes after, you know, he gets the job done, he looks after, you know, Baby Yoda, and then, you know, and of course, you know, never backs down, you know, when he has the job, he doesn't walk away from it. And obviously in this one, he became a little bit, there are a lot more situations where he was more openly heroic. The episode with Ahsoka, it's a little bit like that. And then, of course, also Boba Fett, too, basically being
awesome.
Like a guy this time. Yeah.
I was unsure about that when he first came in. I mean, I knew it was Boba Fett from the ship, but I was like, man, how are they going to keep this old school iconic character and not harm him in the new age kind of way, but still keep him badass?
Well, it helps that Boba Fett wasn't really a character in the original series. He was just there.
right. That's true.
It's the books. That's really true. It's good that you mentioned that, Luke, because for all our listeners, I know Boba Fett really gained more. He really gained more nostalgia and more recognition in the books, because it's explained in the books how he escapes You know, the great Sarlacc pit and everything, the Arlacc pit. His jetpack kicks on the last minute and he survives. He goes around hunting Jedi. So, you know, he was always more bigger than the books than he has ever been in the movies. So it's really cool how they still added to that. They didn't take anything away from him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Another thing I kind of noticed was, Mando, obviously, because of the character of Grogu, he became a little bit more, I guess, I mean, I'm not saying this as a derogatory way, but he became a little bit softer.
Yes, I was just going to say that.
Like,
way soft.
He obviously was a little bit more, concerned with the kid. But in a lot of fights, because of all of, like, the different, you know, we had Shaka, we had Boba Fett, we had the other Mandalorians, we brought, you know, we had all types of people that were, like, helping Mando out. Like, there were a lot of scenes where Mando was not, as in control as he was, as I feel that he was more in the last season. And now, granted, he was in a lot of, like, scrapes and whatnot that other people kept, you know, that helped him out. It felt a little bit like he got a lot less cold this yes. time around. So I thought that was interesting. I'm interested to see what the next season is because now Grogu is out of the picture.
I want to get back to that in just a second. You know, you talked about him being soft, and one of the most, I think, touching, besides the last episodes, which we'll talk about too, but Chapter 15, The Believer, I thought that was such a good episode on so many fronts because it talks about the softer sides of Stormtroopers too, because Mayfield, you know, he has huge conflict where he is mad at the general, you know, for killing and sacrificing all his men. That was a good scene. And he was some of us got to sleep at night.
I didn't even expect that, too, because that was Bill Burr as, you know, from last time. And the character in the first episode was basically just Bill Burr. He was just a guy being just like an angry asshole, loudmouth, talking.
Right.
And it was funny for what he was doing, too. And then this time around, when they brought him back, he was also doing a lot of the same sort of like, guys, what the fuck are you doing? This is all crazy.
Yeah.
Then that scene where he has to, like, confront this his commanding officer, basically looking face to face with his regret and his pain, and you know, I'm like, damn, it was a very, very good scene.
Not to mention,
it was a good scene for both of them. It was a good scene for the Mandalorian and Mayfield's character, because they were at the start of that episode themselves. Mando was very hard, very in his ways, and Bill Burr's character was more jokey. But as it went along, and they were trying to find out himself, he was questioning again, why does he wear that armor? Like, you're taking it off right now. That was one of the big things. He took off his entire armor, which is a big no-no for the Mandalorians to do in order to infiltrate the Stormtroopers facility, as well as taking off his helmet, and for Mayfield to sort of like come back and face his demons with his old general, who was part of a very cool kind of side story. He talked about the Operation Cinder, which was the Empire attacking its own. It was like a purge, and he was part of that. He saw that general kill his own men. So, like Rob was saying, like, he's like, some of us has got to sleep at night because it haunted him. And you did see that, like, not every stormtrooper is an idiot, and like,
he's not totally a stormtrooper, wise ass.
I was actually thinking about Operation Cinder, and obviously I know, because it's the idea was, and in deeper lore, the point is that, like, it was a contingency plan that if the Emperor died, the Empire would attack various cities and controlled by the Empire as, like, punishment, because it's like, you let the Emperor die, therefore the Empire itself shouldn't exist because you failed it so badly. Which is such a petty thing to do, and it made me think, like, the emperor has, like, some Trump qualities, because that's what Trump would do. He's like, if I get killed, you gotta, like, kill a whole bunch of other people just because.
Or clones of me.
Yeah, right.
Which we also see in this as well.
It's a little less, like, competent as it starts to go on.
Right.
Obviously, you gotta pull together the whole the prequel stuff, which was obviously like, oh, he fucking did it, but as it went on, it's like, now you're just kind of ridiculous, Emperor.
Even in hindsight to the prequels 1, 2, and 3, it wasn't like he was hiding that well.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
That's true. It's they not are, like they it also probably isn't the soon. Best plan of because of the way it's written. Everybody else is just too stupid to figure it out.
Right. Well, what did you guys think about that? You're touching on some points here. Let's just get into that really quickly. That you both bring up a point where they're touching on prequel stuff, right? Uh-huh. And they're bringing back characters in this season with Boba Fett, touching with prequels. They're bringing characters from animated series into it,
right.
Extended lore, and now we're seeing that they are trying to tie in.
And then, of course, the big grand finale. We get a CGI Luke Skywalker.
I want to get to that. Hold on.
In what is a very obvious homage to the Rogue One scene, yeah. Darth Vader. Like, it's literally like that, but reverse.
Well, hold on. Steve, what were you saying, though? And I want to get around the table here.
What did you think about now they're trying to tie in the Emperor's storyline? We're just talking about him. We saw that they have a cloning facility, and they look like something was in some type of pod that they saw. They didn't really touch too much on that, but it looks like they're trying to tie in the Snoke and that type of the Disney trilogy. So they're really – this series is like the glue right now for Star Wars, for everything. And I don't know if that will work. You know, I'm a little frightened as the series goes on, even though this was fantastic. What can you do? Like, you can't repair Star Wars as a whole. There are just going to be too many loopholes, too many plot holes that have happened. And this series has done a lot. And like we're about to speak on the last finale of what they did when they made people feel good about Star Wars again. It's good as in the moment. But what can we expect going forward for this?
Okay, so I have some thoughts I want to say. First of all, I didn't mind the CGI Luke Skywalker. It didn't have emotions. Harping back to the whole Darth Vader with the hand and everything, I knew it was Luke because when you see a single X-Wing in the Star Wars lore, you should automatically know that's fucking Luke Skywalker.
It was too. You see the R2 unit.
And basically, you know, the hand and everything, you know, from when he lost his. But, you know, more importantly, though, that's off a book, too, of when Luke actually went down to the dark side to help destroy the dark side a little bit, too, when he actually joined the Empire for a moment. Well, fake join them. But I really did like that episode a lot. It did make me feel good about Star Wars again. And my whole... You know, the whole pushback to, oh, why would they get a CGI Luke Skywalker? Okay, Luke Skywalker is so essential to some aspects of the lore of Star Wars because he is the Jedi Master in that current time. He's the most important Jedi ever. He's the guy who conquered the Empire. So, you can't make the argument that he can't be in any of these old kind of, you know, pieces because he has to be. He's the Jedi Master. Now, if you want to have the debate on whether you should get someone else to play him, I get that. But the whole to be like, oh, they're just bringing back Luke Skywalker to make you like Star Wars. No, it's because Luke Skywalker is a quintessential part of the lore continuing on for Star Wars. He still exists. Mark Hamill may be old, but Luke Skywalker, the person in Star Wars, is Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, he's the nuclei to the blueprint to every other hero that goes after this. So, unfortunately, people don't want to hear that. But, like, yeah, there wouldn't be a Rey or a Kylo Ren or any of the extended lore after this if it wasn't for Luke Skywalker. And you kind of needed that scene to see Luke Skywalker not as a whiny kid or being beaten by Darth Vader or the Emperor.
The Jedi Master. You needed to see him
as a Jedi Master in his own right and you know, to have that assurance like, oh, okay, he's that strong, you know what I mean? And
he is just that
the
strong.
Reassurance, yeah, the reassurance from fans. And it, you know, again, people are gonna say, like you said, Rob, like, oh, it was just a nostalgic kick, you know, this show didn't need him. It's like, you could say that. But then like you could say that about Boba Fett. You didn't really need him, you know what I mean? He kinda wasn't even there in that episode.
Speaking of Boba Fett, what's with that continuation of that series, huh?
Oh yeah, the Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah, so we have him. That? Yeah, interesting, right? It's going to be its own thing. He's teaming up with that other bounty hunter we saw at the end. He goes and kills Bib Fortuna, who kind of took over the Jabba the Hutt position. Which that was pretty hilarious. Sick. I like that.
I like how they touch back to that. As soon as he walked in, I knew he was going to be like, Boba! Like, you know, just in that certain voice with the way he talks, is Boba.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Yeah, that I don't know. That's an interesting thing, and that's another show that's supposed to be airing around the same time season 3 of The Mandalorian is supposed to happen.
21 here is when they're saying it's that's when the production, that's when it'll arrive.
Yes.
December 21. It's going to be interesting. I mean, where are they going to... I mean, I personally think, you know, someone from Star Wars listens to Real Sharks because they finally have learned their lessons, and they're like, you know what, no more movies, guys. The movies kill us in the long run. Let's just do shows. Let's do a space opera. Because when you do a show, I mean, I bring this up because Luke has said this before. When you do a show, you have so much more room to play and build off the lore and build off the nostalgia and just, you know, explore more. And I really think that's what Star Wars has always been missing. I've said this since the first Mandalorian. I liked it automatically. And so many people were like, why? It's just a spaghetti western. I'm like, because you never saw how they paid for things in Star Wars. You didn't know they had different credits. You didn't know they had guilds and stuff. You only know that stuff if you play the games. That's it. But it wasn't never official canon now because, you know, Disney took it over. But now it is. And I just think it's awesome how they add that nostalgia to it. I like to see that, you know, the Empire runs all these various different planets. And they're not just doing massacres. They're just looking to run things sometimes. I just think that's a great thing that Mandalorian brings to the table of Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, definitely.
Yep.
Anything else, guys?
We'll just have to see what's going to happen with The Mandalorian. Like I said, I personally feel like it was great. For the whole season 2 of The Mandalorian, my grade on it, I think my score would probably be a 9.5, maybe close to a 9 to a 10, but maybe it's ruffling on that because there were some good things that happened, like a lot of good things, but there were still some things that are a little weird.
Are you talking about the baby Yoda eating the eggs, Steve? Are you still offended by that? My God.
No, you know, to be honest
Dorgu
with you,
Dorgu committing genocide? Come on now. No big deal.
It is funny. I don't know if this was changed, but they mentioned something about like the family clan later, like family line. So it seemed to imply that it was just this line. It might not have been the whole species. I don't know if they went back and retroactively changed that, so that it didn't sound that Baby Yoda was committing genocide. Baby Yoda was still technically committing abortion.
While simultaneously people are trying to kill this baby.
Exactly.
Even though he's 76. Oh my God.
Mandalorian is just one about abortion. Giant metaphor for the pro-life, pro-choice argument. That's all
that
it is.
Funny. That goes hand in hand, pro-life, pro-choice with Star Wars.
But you know, one more thing I want to add to, and this is something that I have never ever heard touched in the lore of Star Wars, which was said so subtly, and they moved on, and it wasn't a big thing, is when Mando confronts the other Mandalorians, especially the girl who got the Darksaber. We didn't even mention that, too, because the whole defeating her in combat and all this and that. They talk about how he's not even technically a real Mandalorian. He's, like, been raised, they said, like, by tavern folk and people who just know the stories of the Mandalorian. He's like a radical zealot.
Yeah, he's like the older style of Mandalorians, and she's like, that's been...
Like
gone,
elite.
Like gone and dead. Yeah. It's like, you know, there are many different Mandalorians.
And for our listeners who don't know, I'm just going to go real quick into it. For those of you who don't know the whole history of the Mandalorians actually come from a planet called Mandalore, which is actually their ancient planet, their home planet. And they decided to basically try to take over the galaxy, well, the Outer Rim worlds. And it was a big, huge thing between the Jedi, either to go fight them or let the Republic, at the time, the Old Republic, do it itself. Some of the Jedi went to the dark side, especially Malak and Revenant, because this is from the games. And then the
Mandalore Wars.
Yep, and then the Mandalorians were beat, and basically they ended up being kind of exiles, and then they kind of looked for each other, just like kind of where they're at now, in a way, in the show. So it's interesting how it's like almost two time periods repeated itself, since I don't know if they want to technically say Knights of the Old Republic games or lore. I don't know, but... Mm-hmm. they pretty much did copy that in the sense of Mandalore. In the sense of Mandalore.
I think it's safe to say. See, it's safe to say that with this series, they're kind of they're touching base at least. You can say that they're touching this because they're bringing in like these characters, like we said, bringing back Boba Fett. We kind of glossed over it. It's pretty big. The man was considered dead. You know what I mean? In the lore, in the books, he was alive. He got out of the Sarlacc pit, but to see him physically on screen, live action, now confirms he's alive. To see Luke Skywalker not only alive but like in mastery form, it's very, very big for this show. They're very ballsy with it. They're doing things that we can only dream of as Star Wars fans. I feel like it's a very positive step going forward for Star Wars. We'll see how it ends.
All right, so let's move into another show I thought would be interesting. Amazon's Lord of the Rings. They've teased that Sauron is going to be the villain, which I think is kind of interesting because he's not really the... Oh, no, Sauron, not Saruman. Yeah, Sauron's going to be the villain in the new Lord of the Rings series.
Okay, now is this... So as I remember, the point of the show is going to be, I believe, is the...
Second Age.
Second Age, and that is when the... and basically, it ends. The Second Age ends with the Third Age.
Yes,
meaning that big, you know, the big scrap down with Sauron. Mm-hmm. That's going to be the big fight. So that's interesting. I mean, I was glad they're not doing the books again as a longer series. I mean, you could do that. They're dense enough, and there's so many like ancillary characters that we don't, you know. That we only hear a little bit about, that obviously you could fill in the blanks and do other, you know, other plot lines with, you know, with the Lord of the Rings kind of also there. That'd be a little bit too messy, I think. And I also just think, you know, it's a little bit too early right now to really be thinking about making the Lord of the Rings movies again.
Well, let me tell you what, Amazon's making sure that they're going to be cashing in on this because this series has already cost them $1 billion.
Well, that's...
I'm not even joking.
Well, Bezos is a trillionaire, so who even cares? Like, it's probably it's absolutely a drop in the bucket for them. I mean, I don't even know how much I truly don't know how much Prime really even brings in terms of subscriptions. But it's probably like it's absolutely negligible. But the Second Age is a really, and what's great is that obviously a lot of book dirt. I only know. I know some about the Second Age. I don't know all that much.
Silmarillion? Read the Silmarillion?
I've never read the Silmarillion. It's a very tough book to get through.
It is.
That's a tome.
But the thing is, the Silmarillion isn't even necessarily about like the Second Age. It's about like the First Age. It's about all this other stuff.
Which we'll probably get referenced
As we go. So I'm excited. The good part about the Second Age is that you have a lot of characters, obviously, that are there, mostly the elves and the wizards. But there's a lot of other stuff to kind of go with to basically just, you know, to go off of new characters. So it doesn't 100% all the time have to be characters we're all familiar with. So that's
a good thing. I think they're kind of taking it like how Star Wars is a little bit. I think this is because, you know, it's kind of funny. It's like these two are almost always competing in a weird way.
Lord of
the Rings and Star Wars. So they're making they have the Mandalorian. So now they're making this Lord of the Rings show. And, you know, there is so much. In fact, you know, I guarantee you they could probably make up a lot of shit and no one would notice.
No one would care.
No one would notice.
There's too much. But we might have a trifecta there because with the Game of Thrones House of the Dragon coming out, you might have a triple threat match going on between
the battle because of those three shows.
Right? There's a battle of some fantasy and then Star Wars coming in. And then like they have their two shows. So it's going to be very, very space age versus fantasy head-to-head.
Game of Thrones, first of all, Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones both have an advantage because both books have been done. You know, because they're not going to go off of anything that George R. R. Martin is still writing or that, you know, J.R.R. Tolkien is still writing. It's already been done, so they're not doing any of that. So it's really interesting that they're kind of just going off that and they're just basically... they're giving themselves a lot more room to play with, basically, is what I'm trying to get at here, because it's just going to be an interesting how they're going to just – they're going to do a lot of filler, put it that way. Especially with – but Game of Thrones, though, unfortunately, is at a disadvantage because they have to come back from a horrific, horrific finale that people are still making, which Real Sharks hasn't made. But trust us, if we did, it would be the best one about how bad that last season of Game of Thrones was, because trust me. There's a lot, because I keep hearing people go, how it should have ended. No, you don't even know how it should have ended either, because you guys don't even know Game of Thrones ethic or lore.
Right.
But for real, though, I'm interested to see who comes out on top. And then when is Stranger Things 4 supposed to come out soon, too?
Possibly.
Yes.
Are they working on that? Let's just real quick look up Stranger Things 4 here. What's up with that?
This is also surprising, too, because Netflix's reputation for getting rid of shows after two seasons. I'm assuming, obviously, they have to keep a couple of shows ongoing. You know,
it's supposed to be this year.
Yeah, it's supposed to be coming up pretty soon, within this month, actually.
I am curious because obviously COVID probably shut down for a long time, but right now there are, you know, Hollywood has found ways to kind of keep doing the social distance, or at least found a way to attempt filming under with COVID. It's not all, based off of what I've seen, it's not always successful, but you never know. I suspect season four will probably have a lot more one-on-one scenes, maybe a little bit more reliance on CGI or interior scenes, maybe not a lot of, you know, not a lot of strenuous scenes, or maybe fewer actors.
And a lot of anti-Russian propaganda.
Yeah. Definitely.
I'm not defending Russia or anything, but it's like, can't America get over it?
The
Cold War. Also, where do we have room to stand right now?
Right. Right.
Where did you get off criticizing
those damn Bolsheviks and overthrowing their government? Those damn commies.
Yeah. Where do we get off attacking another country for authoritarianism? Let's take a backseat here, America. And let's not throw some stones in this glass house that's going to crash, possibly.
No, but you should listen to the Real Sharks podcast all the time. That's what you should do. All the time. All the time.
There you go.
All right. So this has been this episode of Real Sharks. It has been me, your host, Rob, with Lucas Maximus.
Hey.
And Steve.
Yo.
And from the word of Buddha, we'll catch you guys on the flip side.